Going to head up to where Reed Irie tells me there was 4 inches of fluffy white stuff that fell this morning. Mackville, North Dakota. Hello, Reed.
Hey, how are you doing, Mick?
I'm okay, but holy mackerel, next time the wind comes up, you guys are going to see some blowing snow, it looks like. Huh?
It could blow around a little bit. It's awfully fluffy.
Yeah. Hey.
Not tough to shovel, though.
Well, just went out there and breathed a little bit, and it blew off the steps.
You bet. Yeah. No, that would the leaf blower would work just fine today.
Hey, excellent. Yeah, the rechargeable leaf blower even would take care of this too.
There you go.
Good. All right. Well, we want to talk a little bit here about President Obama made some proposals for his fiscal 2017 budget. Came out yesterday afternoon, and it was interesting. Includes proposals for USDA's crop insurance program that would incentivize, as they call it, encourage farmers to choose production practices that minimize climate change impacts. And so what that's done basically is, well, it kind of took away the premium for buying subsidies for the harvest price option program, and also put the big hit on prevent plant crop insurance. So anyway, that's what I saw. Reed, what did you hear about, and what's the crop insurance industry talking about this budget proposal?
Well, I think right along, we fight one battle after another ever since the 2014 Ag Act has occurred, and I know most of our approved insurance providers that we do business with just keep suggesting, don't take your eye off the ball, because they're just going to keep knobbing on us every chance they get.
And here's another example of that. It's what, $18 billion cut over the next 10 years. And again, what have you heard? Have you heard any details?
Not necessarily, no. I think it was so fresh off the cuff here that, all you kind of hear about is that, they don't like the harvest price option. And they don't like the prevent plant overall, and especially the buy-up option, which is a 10% buy-up. Part of my analogy forever has been, why don't they then give us a 40-20 John Deere type of tractor that we can buy and add prevent plant if we want? But the 60% prevent plant is part of the policy.
Yeah.
There are some people that don't need that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Is what they're doing is just keep taking away from the producer. The next thing they'll do is try to take away subsidy, a bigger percentage of the subsidy that they already take care of, at a 70% policy, for instance. They're going to keep going. We give up our farm payments, our farm bill payments, to make the new farm bill, and then they just keep trying to take away something else every time we turn around.
Man. Yeah, in December, I think Congress faced a $3 billion cut to crop insurance over a couple of years, and they were able to reject that. That was because basically if they pulled that off, the companies, the reinsurance companies, the companies that you guys get insurance from, would basically be out of business, wouldn't they?
Exactly,
yeah.
Yep. It's just, again, they just keep knobbing at us and trying to take away what they've got. The people that get affected with this whole process are not only the producers, but, landowners. If they're trying to rent land out to producers that have wet land on them or whatever, hey, they're a recipient of this cutback. In my mind, the bankers get affected big time because they can't protect as much, or the producers can't protect as much of their bottom line. It goes on to the agribusinesses. If we can't farm with every ability we can, pretty soon we got to cut back on inputs and those type of things. And ultimately, it affects our producer, our public. Our cheap food policy gets more expensive.
Yeah. Now, North Dakota is kind of famous for prevent plant. It's often too dry or too wet. We've had 2 decades of being too wet, and you're kind of up there on the fringe of the Devil's Lake Basin where it's chewed up. In fact, you personally have experienced the impact of of a lot of prevent plant here in the last couple of decades. So,
absolutely.
I think in D.C. they just kind of look at, hey, the countryside's beautiful and farmers have a good year every year.
Yeah. At the same time, we've got farm income coming out in the news releases of 50 to 55% down in the last 3 years. I don't understand it all, Mick, but one thing that we're reminding our producers at our crop input meeting update meetings the last week or two here is that, hey guys, you got to stay on this thing. If just a reminder, along with the grower groups, that individual farmers have to get on email or get on the phone, and let's be rattling our senators and representatives to keep some of these changes from happening, because if we're not all pretty diligent about doing that, they'll pull the wool over our eyes.
And this is a budget proposal from one branch of the three branches of government, and the last couple of times the legislative branch of the government was able to stop the wool from being pulled, and maybe that's where we can do this again. Huh?
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think we just got to stay sharp and be cognizant of what they're trying to throw at us. Some of them have a big curveball to throw at us, a Burt Blylevin type. So we got to be careful.
And he's got a heater. Well, maybe not anymore, but he sure did have one.
Yeah,
I get the reference. So, well, Reed, in the short term, again, this is things that we got. This is a battle that has to be fought in the mid to near future. But in the short term, what's the deadline for 2016 crop insurance purchases this year?
Well, we've got the March 15th. We're setting the price for February as we speak. During the month of February. And March 15th is the deadline to get guys decision-making time and as to the level of coverage they feel they need. We're not going to be able to cover the expenses with our guarantee, revenue guarantees this year by any means, or with the lower prices and whatnot. So, the premiums will be a little bit cheaper, but they don't cover as much. You're not covering as many dollars of liability.
Is that the main discussion that's happening in your grower meetings? Kind of like, hey, what's the best business option?
Exactly. Taking a look at what your costs are, I know speaking with some of the local bankers, there's a lot of scratching their noggins as to how we're going to get this thing, financed and potentially, come out of it. It's not new. In the years of being a grain elevator manager, I remember many years during the mid-90s where producers were going to the field and there wasn't many things that could break even, but, hopefully you get the decent crop and get a little rally in the market to give us opportunity to make some money at it. And that's where buying, the revenue products and buying up as high as you can stand. And if we get a shot at through a summer rally that we can sell some profitable levels, that's where we got to try utilize our policy and get some grain sold ahead of time. So.
Yeah, and that's where the crop insurance, the revenue insurance, and the farm bill all kind of melded together to provide a little bit of assurance to not only the producer and the crop insurance agents and the bankers that, hey, we can weather this storm, whether it's this year or the 2 or 3 year plan, farm plan that you want to look at. So here we go again.
Huh? Yep. We're at it. The old calendar flicks pretty quick here, so the time is coming. We got to make some decisions again.
Yeah, it'll be March 15th before we know it. So,
absolutely.
Are you or
a lot of scare? With the El Nino, La Nina, a lot of market or weather issues out here. So, who knows what we got looking at us, Mick? So.
Yeah. Are you or again the growers who you had meetings with here in the last few weeks, anybody even close to finalizing their plans for the production season yet?
I think everybody's looking for a contract. So the malt barley contract are typically out, and they're not as many of those available this year because they had a big barley crop last year. The dry bean guys are out with some contracts, but you know there's just a lot of unknown as to if you look at your budgets and bottom line, there are not many that show profitably at this point in time, Mick, yeah, without having above normal APH level of yields,
yeah,
to try and make it happen. But you know, I think everybody's kind of got. Plan A is kind of scratched on a piece of paper, put it that way.
Yeah, well, there's got some time to think about it, but all of a sudden D-Day will be here. So I guess
absolutely,
time to start talking. Sure. All right, well, Reed Irie Insurance up there in the Mackville, North Dakota office. If guys want to chat about this further with you, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, they can call me on my cell phone at 701-351-0710. Or you can get look us up on the web at irieinsurance.com.
Excellent. All right, Reed, thanks so much for the chat and the insight into the budget proposal and how it affects crop insurance and farmers, and sure appreciate it. Have a great 2016, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You bet, Mick. You get the weather done for us, right, and we'll be just fine.
All right, well, I'm kind of forecasting that it'll be okay. A lot of parts of the country are going to have some major dry heat challenges this year, but keeping my fingers crossed that this flip from El Nino to La Nina will be a little more gradual than everybody's counting on. So we'll see okay, kind of reminiscent of 2012, which didn't turn out to be too bad.
Not for us. That was just fine. So,
yeah.
All right. Thanks,
okay.
Mick.
You're welcome, Reed. Have a good rest of the week.
You bet. Bye.
Bye now. All right, thanks a lot. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Farm Talk continuing, and we're going to remind you that tomorrow is Giving Hearts Day. A lot of great local nonprofit organizations and charities and other can depend on or at least receive a lot of benefits from tomorrow Giving Hearts Day, because the Dakota Medical Foundation matches many of those. Well, they match it up to a certain point, so everybody's encouraged to give. It's kind of become an annual thing. It's ahead of Valentine's Day, the Thursday before Valentine's Day. So we want to get you all revved up and motivated to give tomorrow. It's Giving Hearts Day. And one of the organizations that you should talk about giving to is the North Dakota 4-H Foundation. And Assistant Director Tamara Maddock joins us now. Good afternoon, Tamara.
Hi there, Mick. Thanks again for having us. Actually, I'm the director of the North Dakota FFA Foundation, but we are great partners with the North Dakota or 4-H Foundation. And
it says that right here, too.
That's all right.
North
Don't
Dakota
worry
FFA.
About that. We welcome the opportunity to be here, and Meredith Gilroy and myself, actually, we've worked very closely over the last 2 years because I tell you what, we do support the same students throughout agriculture and throughout leadership positions in the state of North Dakota. So, we have a lot of the same constituency and that kind of thing, and a lot of the same supporters. So we really appreciate this opportunity to be able to get out there. I want to say, first of all, before I forget, that a huge thanks goes out to the Dakota Medical Foundation. Without them having an event like this, there's no way that we could have the reach in one day that they provide for us. And there's nearly 300 nonprofits that are benefiting from their organization just tomorrow. So
yeah, for the North Dakota FFA Foundation, what did it mean to you last year in numbers?
Oh, I tell you what, it was a tremendous outpouring of support. We made almost $23,000 in a 24-hour period.
Wow.
And it was folks from all over the state of North Dakota. Of course, we have alumni representing the great state of North Dakota FFA throughout the nation as well. So we saw donations from way far corners of the United States. And it really was. I know the Dakota Medical Foundation coined a phrase a while ago called friend-raising. It's not really fundraising we're doing tomorrow. We're friend-raising. And I just love that. And it really was true for both the 4-H and the FFA foundations.
Because it's neighbors helping neighbors.
It really is. Yeah. And, you know, you will always remember the clover and the corduroy when it comes to your future job experiences. I challenge anybody to sit down with their coworkers, with you know, just in any vacant room. Sometime it's a great conversation starter, and just say, "Hey, what's your connection, if any, to the 4-H and the FFA?" And there will be somebody in that group that's going to be able to give you a story about what that did for them personally, yeah. Or maybe a grandson or a grandchild. So.
Yeah, yeah, because I also can recall a lot of going to neighbors' houses for the 4-H club meetings when, you know, and generally, again, stereotype, the 4-H are the younger folks, and then the FFA are the either junior high through high school and then the first year or two of college. But 4-H... now it just continues right through high school.
You bet. And that truly is some of our strongest members. And you'll be visiting with one here in a little bit, Ashley Stoppelworth from Kindred. And she really is a testament to what both organizations can do. But I myself started with North Dakota 4-H when I was in the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And to give you an example of how closely intertwined those two organizations are, I remember my very first speech and demonstration was using the little foam pom-pom or the pom-poms, and yeah. I created a pom-pom critter, and I was all of 8 years old. But Mick, what it was about was getting an eight-year-old child who'd never been up in front of a group of people to give a demonstration, and it didn't matter what it was about. It just got, you know, broke that barrier, doing what most people say is their number one fear in the world is public speaking. Mm-hmm. And really, both organizations are so wonderful at that. But like I said, I started in the eighth grade. I was a 4-H member for 11 years, and I was an FFA member for 5 years in the state. And when I say they're so closely linked, it's a community of people that really want to see students do well and achieve in those two organizations. And it just so happened that my high school ag education instructor was actually the one who got me started in 4-H. And that sounds a little odd, but he was my livestock judging coach and my horse judging coach. And so he took me under his wing as a sixth grader and said, you should try this. And then he was smart enough to say, let's keep you in this and get you involved in the FFA too. So
pretty cool. And now here a few years later, it sounds like you still have trouble public speaking.
Right?
You have no trouble at all.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes.
My family may beg to differ.
Okay. No, Tamara is now, first of all, before we get too far into it, and, you know, the message is tomorrow's Giving Hearts Day. Remember 4-H and FFA. But let's talk about, you know, and a lot of people do know exactly, you know, their local 4-H and FFA chapters, the 4-H clubs. And, yeah, we support and encourage, and that's a great idea. But what does the FFA Foundation and the 4-H Foundations do?
Well, you know, it's the mission of both organizations, and I know when we say we're helping our members, just to give you an idea. So the mission of the North Dakota FFA Foundation is to support FFA members and their leadership opportunities and also ag education. And so when you are giving a donation to the North Dakota FFA Foundation or the 4-H Foundation, you're helping members that are statewide. Meredith can probably give me numbers on, you know, the number of active clubs that we have in the state, but North Dakota is happy to announce that with the opening of the South Prairie High School just outside of Minot, we are now at 84 chapters across the state. We have 4,700 members statewide. And really, I the best way I can brag about this, because I have four children, Mick, so I'm in the middle of summer breaks me every year because these sports camps and all this kind of good things. Because of the generous donations that we get to the North Dakota FFA Foundation, not only can we sponsor activities and provide awards for these kids' achievements and scholarships for their futures, but we're also able to keep the cost of our registrations for a lot of our different events very, very affordable. I can send a student to NDSU's campus for an entire week for state FFA convention, room and board included, and it cost me about $152. I challenge most other parents to try to find a basketball camp or a football camp that you can do that. And so,
or grandma and grandpa.
Or grandma and
help
grandpa.
Subsidize that, yeah.
You bet. There's a lot of help out there. So it really is helping us. And then some of the ways that we've been able to kind of even outreach a little bit more is helping our ag teachers and our 4-H leaders and that kind of thing with the curriculum that they're provided to help those students as well. And you hear, you know, elementary school teachers talk about it all the time. I mean, they always talk about how much money comes out of their own pocket, ag teachers, club member, club leaders.
Because they believe in the cause.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a passion that they have, and oftentimes at the sacrifice of their own families sometimes, yeah, too. So right on. I mean, we have a full list of details at both of our websites, the 4-H and the North Dakota FFA Foundation, that talks about some of the programs that are investing in. But honestly, we just had a great week. The beginning of January, we were able to hand out over 260 FFA jackets to brand new members, and that was all through donations made by private individuals or corporations. So I like to say that it may be one of the most important jackets that they ever wear, and so you're giving them a fresh start on this path.
Yeah, well, it's a fabulous concept. It's, you know, the Giving Hearts Day tomorrow, of which Dakota Medical Foundation will match, and it's up to...
So, and I will clarify a little bit there, if that's okay.
Sure.
So the Dakota Medical Foundation provides this wonderful platform, and if you are a nonprofit in North Dakota who provides a healthcare service, I think that's the best way to think about that. So if you provide a healthcare service, Dakota Medical Foundation will match those donations tomorrow.
Okay.
Those of us who maybe provide, leadership or education, those kind of things. A lot of the pet shelters in town and those different nonprofits are also on there. Those individuals need to come up with a base match of $4,000 from their donors in order to participate tomorrow.
Okay.
And so we have secured funds of our own from our own private donors, as has the 4-H Foundation. And so, like I said, we're just grateful that Dakota Medical Foundation initially had started with the medical nonprofits, but now that they've taken all nonprofits under their wing and know that, their motto this year is find a charity to love. And so I liken it a little bit to Amazon shopping.
Okay, sure.
You get to log on to impactgiveback.org tomorrow and you get
and
to...
And then just click away.
You click away. Fill that cart with all those great donations to nonprofits.
Excellent. So. All right. Well, it is Tamara Maddock, Assistant Director of the... or are you the director?
The Assistant Director.
Assistant Director
of the... Is our director, and she's located out of Bismarck.
Yeah, so. All right, of the North Dakota FFA Foundation. Well, let's take you kind of set the foundation for what will happen tomorrow, and let's take a break, come back and visit with Meredith and Ashley, and talk about the specifics of what, when people give tomorrow to 4-H and FFA, what it'll accomplish.
So, sounds great. Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, Tamara. We'll get you back on the radio again here in just a moment, and we'll be right back. This is Farm Talk. Right now we're visiting with Meredith Gilroy, Executive Director for the North Dakota 4-H Foundation. Hello, Meredith.
Hello. Thanks for having me today.
You're welcome. It's kind of exciting. Is this the night before Christmas and all through the house, all that?
It really is. We're very excited for tomorrow.
And I asked Tamara the same question. What did it mean to you financially last year?
Last year, we raised just over $19,000. All of that money that we raised last year and that we will raise tomorrow goes towards our programs. So it helps all of our 4-H activities across the state, and it helps us reach all of our 4-H youth.
And specifically, what can you accomplish with the extra help you'll get tomorrow?
Well, last year, we send students each year to National 4-H Congress and Conference. That's one of the areas that we send them. We send 8 youth and 2 adult chaperones to go with them. That's in Washington, D.C. and Atlanta. A lot of these students haven't been able to travel outside of North Dakota before, and we cover the cost fully for them. So they don't have to worry about that. That's one of the areas that the money that we raise tomorrow will go towards. It provides... the funds for our programs in our other program areas. So, it really helps us reach over 5,000 4-H'ers a year. And then from that, we're able to reach almost 30,000 youth across North Dakota with 4-H-related activities.
And those are the students that are in school. And some of them are very urban. They're not your... Again, we talked stereotypes earlier. They're not your typical farm kids.
Absolutely. We have a wide array of activities that we do. We have science, technology, engineering, and math programs that we do. And here in Fargo, we have science that it just happens here in Fargo. And so there's all over the state, we have these activities that youth have the opportunity to do. And robotics is another one we've started recently. Yeah. Our youth are loving it.
So, yeah, and what youth, boy or girl, not want to build a robot or shoot off a rocket?
Exactly. We have national 4-H science kits that are available to all of our youth, and they have the opportunity to meet with their club and work on that science kit and learn something about science that day. And it's fun, enriching, and exciting for them to do. And that's one of the areas that funds raised tomorrow will go towards.
All right. Going to ask you a question, which is kind of a no-brainer for being out in the country, but in town, it maybe it needs a little explaining. The 4-H has introduced shooting sports to students, and it's a good thing, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does that incorporate into some of the schools that have very strict regulations regarding that?
That's a great question. You know, we reach over 15,000 youth with our shooting sports programs. They're involved in their 4-H club level. So they have the opportunity to attend shooting sports activities throughout the state. They tend to fill up quickly because people are really excited about it, but they sign up at their county level and they have the opportunity to attend these archery events and other shooting sports activities.
Yeah, so it's not just the pellet gun, the BB gun.
No.
They're archery. And, I grew up with a .22 and a .20 gauge, but so I would want to develop my archery skills.
It's a lot of fun. Our youth love it.
Yeah, excellent. All right. Well, again, many things, including archery and things that you can accomplish with the help of the shooting, with the help of the GiveBackImpact.org tomorrow.
ImpactGiveBack.org.
All right. And remember the North Dakota 4-H Foundation, North Dakota FFA Foundation. All right, hey, let's bring Ashley on a little bit. The voice of the whole event tomorrow, Ashley from Kindred.
Yeah.
How you doing?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
You got a great radio voice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Where are you at in your education right now?
Absolutely. So I am a freshman in college this year. I was actively involved in 4-H since I was about 5 years old and began my FFA involvement when I was a freshman in high school. And I'm actually serving as a state FFA officer this year, serving the state of North Dakota FFA and its members, as well as I am a North Dakota 4-H ambassador. So I've been serving as an ambassador since I was 16 years old, and that program goes until you are 22 years old.
Wonderful. And your hometown is?
Kindred, North Dakota.
All right. So, and your current school is?
I'm at NDSU right now.
Yes. An obvious place to be for a 4-H-er. Anyway, what do you want to be when you grow up is the big question. But don't ever grow up is my idea. So what is your major at this point?
So I'm double majoring in marketing and agricultural economics. So after graduation, I hope to get a job in a sales-related field. And then eventually my mom actually owns a small advertising agency. So I'm hoping that someday she will let me go back and work for her. I really developed a passion for both the agriculture industry and the business and marketing side of things.
All right. We've got some people here at the radio stations that could keep you busy for a while, developing your skills. So.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Ashley Stoppelworth, Kindred, North Dakota, developing your skills through 4-H and FFA. So, again, why would you tell everybody why they ought to go to ImpactGiveBack.org tomorrow?
So both of the 4-H, North Dakota 4-H and FFA, I credit with helping make me into the person I am today. When I started 4-H as a five-year-old, I remember going up for my first speech contest, and I was so scared that I wouldn't get out of my seat when the judges called my name to go up and present. So they had to make everyone besides the two judges and my mom in the room, everyone else had to leave. And that was my very first competition. But I can gladly say, because of my start in 4-H today, I have no problem speaking in front of people.